Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. Supporters of Ayatollah Khomeini whooped it up in the streets of Tehran today for Mehdi Bazargan, the man chosen by the Muslim religious leader to head a new provisional government. But their shouts, mingled with the roar of jet planes under the control of Prime Minister Shapur Bakhtiar, as if to demonstrate that the showdown between these opposing forces is not yet at hand. Richard Roth reports.
On the street, the crowds chanted, Bazargan, you are our prime minister. Bakhtiar, you have no authority. But Bakhtiar's military jets streaked back and forth overhead as if to demonstrate he still does control Iran's ultimate power. And in parliament, two measures introduced by Bakhtiar passed overwhelmingly. One to dissolve the dreaded secret police, the Savak. The other to facilitate the prosecution of government officials charged with corruption. In a speech to Parliament, Bakhtiar reaffirmed his resolve to face what he called Iran's increasingly complex problems. He warned against a new dictatorship being created in the name of martyrs and repeated that Iran is one country with just one government. Later, Bakhtiar insisted to a reporter that the situation in Iran is excellent. Some people are noisy, he said. What can I do? Does he fear a military coup? No, said Bakhtiar. I don't think so. Richard Roth, CBS News, Tehran.
Bakhtiar today again rejected Khomeini's demand for his resignation and told Parliament he'll stay in office even if all the members of Parliament quit. Bakhtiar's foreign minister, Ahmed Mir Fenderetsky, has restated what the prime minister said weeks ago. Iran is getting out of CENTO, the Central Treaty Organization. CENTO includes Iran, Turkey, Pakistan, and Britain, with the United States as an active participant. Mir Fenderetsky is quoted by the official government news agency as saying that the continuing presence of Iran in CENTO is inexplicable in the context of the country's new foreign policy. He adds the withdrawal from CENTO will be discussed by the Iranian cabinet within the next few days. Thousands of farmers with their vehicles are on the scene in Washington this morning, continuing their demonstration for higher prices for their products. But the disruption of traffic that they caused yesterday may not be repeated today, as we hear from Diane Sawyer.
The protesting farmers are still developing a schedule for today, one which takes into account the decision of city police to impound their bulky trucks and tractors. The farmers had hoped to use the tractors in a daily ritual of clogging city traffic and attracting national attention. But yesterday, police gave them two choices: drive the tractors out of town on escorted, specified routes, or leave them where they are. The demonstrators decided to leave them. One farmer said, we'll either negotiate a better situation or we'll simply outlast the police. Yesterday's protest was marked by scattered episodes of confrontation. Police used tear gas, nightsticks, and made 19 arrests. Last night, several busloads of riot police remained stationed near the impounded tractors at the base of the Capitol steps, indicating that police expect the tension and unpredictability of yesterday's demonstration to be present again today. For the issues behind the protest, here is Jim McManus.
The heart of the matter is the cost-price squeeze on many of the nation's farmers. Not all of them. On the average, the American farmer had a good year in 1978. But Agriculture Secretary Bob Berglund concedes that the $8 billion net increase in farm income last year was not evenly distributed. Basically, the American agriculture movement members portray themselves as family farmers. They claim that large corporate farms are taking over American agriculture, and they warn that such concentration of power could lead to ever-increasing prices at the supermarket. The thousands of farmers demonstrating in Washington are demanding that Congress order the Agriculture Department to increase federal price supports for their crops, claiming they're being forced out of business by inflation. But their success is doubtful. President Carter concedes that some farmers are being hard hit, but he's committed to his anti-inflation budget. And on Capitol Hill, the Congress also appears to be in a conservative, budget-cutting mood. Jim McManus, CBS News, Washington.
Agriculture Secretary Bob Berglund asserted on ABC this morning that many of the farmers have made bad business judgments and paid too much for land, while others are seeking publicity and are motivated by what he called old-fashioned greed. Secretary Berglund said the farmers can't get their act together. In the works now is a new effort to get the Egyptian-Israeli peace moves unstuck. We'll hear about it from CBS News diplomatic correspondent Marvin Kalb.
Secretary Vance is inviting the foreign minister of Israel and the prime minister of Egypt to return to Washington for another crack at concluding their peace treaty. They have been deadlocked for a few months now, not only over the treaty text, but also over a link which Egypt is demanding between the signing of the treaty and Palestinian elections on the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, perhaps by the end of this year. Israel rejects the timetable. Some officials believe this ministerial meeting, which may begin by the end of next week, would be a prelude to another Camp David-type summit meeting hosted by President Carter for President Sadat and Prime Minister Begin. In principle, the president has agreed to host another summit if both sides show flexibility at the ministerial meetings. All three sides remain committed to the peace treaty. Logically, the events in Iran should encourage both countries to be more flexible. That is the American hope. But in fact, Iran might be having the opposite effect. No one is sure. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
China's Vice Premier Deng Xiaoping arrived in Tokyo today, still nursing the cold he picked up in the United States. He'll be there until he flies back to Peking day after tomorrow. And with his American journey now a thing of the past, Richard C. Hotlett in Washington sums up the principal results.
The hectic activity, real and flim-flam, is over now. The question is, what remains? China has made the American connection, plugging into the U.S. economy, and Deng Xiaoping has given the American people a new picture of China, which may help Congress and business and the banks flesh out the framework of cooperation. The United States, too, has had a tonic. It's been years since a major power came to Washington seeking friendship and the support of American prestige. On one basic political issue, their view of the Soviet Union, they have agreed to disagree. Washington will pursue detente, Peking will deal with what it sees as a Soviet threat. In this, the Chinese seem deadly serious. Just before leaving Seattle, Foreign Minister Wang Hua bitterly denounced Vietnam as serving the Soviet strategic goals in seeking to dominate all Indochina. Earlier, he had said, China will send arms to the Cambodian rebels fighting the Vietnamese invaders. More generally, China seems both able and willing to turn up the heat to create conditions in which Hanoi will have its own Vietnam of endless, grinding guerrilla war. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, Washington.
President Carter meets this morning at the White House with Thailand's Prime Minister Kreang Sok Chomanon, and since Thailand borders on Cambodia, the fighting in that country is certain to be discussed. The woman who tried to assassinate President Ford in 1975 escaped last night with another inmate from the federal women's prison at Alderson, West Virginia, but they were recaptured a few hours later. Barry Serafin has details.
Sarah Jane Moore and Marlene Martino, who was serving a life sentence for conspiracy to murder, fled last night sometime before 9:20 p.m., made their way through the snow and climbed a prison fence. Moore and Martino, whose hand was cut in the escape, told an 18-year-old youth in Alderson that their car had broken down and convinced him to drive them to nearby Lewisburg, West Virginia. From there, they took a cab to White Sulphur Springs, about 35 miles away, and paid the driver $7 in quarters plus a 75-cent tip. They were arrested there shortly before midnight. Associate Prison Warden Marguerite Gardette says Mrs. Moore did not appear upset when she was returned.
She was in a very cheerful mood. She was quite concerned for Miss Martino, who had cut her finger. She was very cooperative. She would not make any comments about the escape.
Sarah Jane Moore has now been placed under extra security. Officials say they were surprised by her escape attempt, surprised because she seemed to have adjusted to prison life, and because the escape appeared to have been poorly planned. Mrs. Moore would have become eligible for possible parole in 1985, but her brief prison break could add more years to her time in jail. Barry Serafin, CBS News, Alderson, West Virginia.
The Pakistani Supreme Court today upheld a conviction and death sentence imposed on former Prime Minister Zulfikar Ali Bhutto and four co-defendants. They were found guilty last year of the murder of one of Bhutto's political opponents. The court turned down an oral request by Bhutto's lawyer for a 30-day stay of execution, but it assured him that Bhutto won't be hanged for at least a week because he's allowed that amount of time to petition for clemency. The dollar declined almost 3 yen today in Tokyo, and it's down slightly on the major European exchanges. Trading in gold is quite after yesterday's spectacular rise.